Thank you, Rabbi Yudin. Rav. Rabbi Yudin, you don't have to feel bad that you don't know who Alexa was. Until a few days ago, I wasn't sure who he or she was either. But I also Googled, and I tried to find out a little bit. Although I have to be honest that it took me a while because I was spelling it Alexi. I didn't think it was Alexa, but eventually I did find the information I needed. Earlier this week, my 10-year-old daughter asked me if I can help her with a project that she's doing for school. She has to take some kind of a invention and describe that invention, how it was in its early stages, and in middle stages, and later stages, past, present, and future. So for some reason, I don't know whether it was her choice or teacher's choice, she chose trains. And she had described the world of trains in the Friedrich Gedeiris in the old days, the world of trains today, and what trains are going to look like in the future. So we had some fascinating work about this. I was familiarizing myself with some of the steam engines back from the late 1800s, and we were trying to figure out what trains are going to look like, if they're going to look like in Doris to come. And I started to think to myself that I can really take this model of past, present, and future and plug it into what I want to speak about tonight. And what I really want to speak about tonight is one pasuk in Chumash, lo sevaru esh b'chol moshvoseichem b'yom HaShabbos, that one is not allowed to light a fire, to kindle a flame on Shabbos. And I want to talk about this a little bit in the sense of past, present, and future. What exactly that pasuk meant, or what it referred to when it was originally said by Kodesh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael over 3,000 years ago. What exactly the ramifications and the consequences of that pasuk are, Bizman Hazeh. And we're going to call Bizman Hazeh today, I guess, pre-Alexa days. We're going to talk about what we view as Bizman Hazeh, almost it's really old style, but electricity kinds of related issues. And then what potentially looks forward to the future, how Los of our Eish B'chom Shaseichem will play out in years to come. Again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Hoya Hoy V'Viyah. He is above and beyond all time. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu uttered these first words of Lo Sevar Eish B'chom Shvaseichem, so everything was included, from the sticks and stones of the days of Matan Torah to the electric lights of Edison to whatever the future may hold for us. It is all has to be addressed and has to be scrutinized through the eyes of this Pasuk in Chumash to the Dvar Hashem of Lo Sevar Eish B'chom Shvaseichem B'yom HaShabbos. So let's go back really to, literally to the beginning. And let's analyze what exactly Lo Sevaru Esh, what does it mean not to kindle a fire, meant in days gone by. So we're pretty familiar with, probably haven't done it that often, we're pretty familiar with what lighting fires was in the ancient world, until not all that long ago. Basically, you rub two sticks together or something of that nature, and you produce the flame, as Chazal tell us in Maseches Pesachim. That's how the very first fire was made in this world, the Adam Arishon. It was actually made on the very first Motzei Shabbos, which is, of course, the reason why we recite the Bracha Bormer Eish on Motzei Shabbos. And that was a flame. You rubbed two sticks together, you had your flame was created, and you threw more fire and more wood in, or if you had a candle, so then you had a flame to start with, you added more oil, etc. So the basic notion of a flame, the basic notion of Lo Sevaru Esh B'chom Shvaseichem, encompassed this idea that you're lighting something up, and whether that fuel, the source of fuel is wood, or whether the source of fuel is an oil or something of that nature, a candle, that was pretty much standard what Lo Sevaru Esh B'chom Shvaseichem meant. And obviously, either to start such a flame or to add to such a flame was an outright Torah prohibition, clearly one of the Lamites Belachas that are prohibited on Shabbos. And then a question began to arise in the more contemporary world of the last 130 years or so, is that let's see if we can pinpoint precisely what Esh really means, because all of a sudden we have a new Shaila that is raised for us, and that is the source that many people are using to light their homes is no longer a candle with oil, but rather people are using to provide light in their homes some kind of an electric device, which includes a metal filament, which is being, and again, I'm not such an expert in the physics of this, so if I say something that's a little bit off, please bear with me, but I am providing some kind of a way to heat up this piece of metal, causing the metal to glow, and the question becomes, well, is that also included in what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Lo Sevaru Esh B'chom Shvaseichem or not? And that's a pretty big, important question, because if the answer to that question is yes, that is the equivalent of the Eish of the Torah, so then one cannot turn on an electric light on Shabbos. The answer to that question would potentially be no, and please don't think I'm opening any possibilities here, but if the answer to that question would be no, then one could begin to negotiate, well, wait a second, if it's not Eish on Shabbos, then maybe it should be permissible. So how would we even go about addressing this question. So we'd have to go really back to the basics and ask ourselves, well, what is the defining feature of Eish in the first place? What is it about that original model of Lo Sevar or Eish that is actually prohibited? So one can understand it really in one of two ways. One can understand that Eish is fundamentally considered to be an Eish because it's something that is giving off light. It is providing heat, giving off light. That is the basic definition of Eish. Or maybe there's more to it than that. Maybe a major component, an integral component of the very definition of Eish is not only that it's a source of light and of heat, but there's actually a fuel. There's actually something that's being consumed visibly that I started out with a piece of wood, I put it on fire, and now 5 minutes later, it's not here anymore. I mean, it's here in theory, but you know, it's turned into coal, it's been given off smoke, whatever the different changes in forms of matter are. Or in the case of a candle, I started out with a candle, I lit the candle, and then an hour later, there's no more candle anymore. Kahena v'kahena. Is that dimension of fire, that something is being removed from, at least from visibly being removed, is that an integral part of the definition of an Eish, or is that, in a sense, tangential? So, for almost 3,000 years, quite frankly, nobody really cared. It didn't really make much of a difference, because when I light a candle, or if I burn a piece of wood, all of the above are happening. It's providing light, it's providing heat, it's being consumed. So clearly that is an Eish. But now, a new question arises. Well, which of those components of Eish are critical and which are tangential? And now we have what we call an halacha nafka mita. Now we have a practical difference. What would we say about turning on a light bulb? When I heat up and I light up a piece of filament, so it's true it's providing light, and it's true it's getting hotter, but it's not being consumed, at least not visibly. In the end of the day, you have to switch the light bulbs at some point, but at least it's not visibly being consumed at that point. Maybe one could argue that is not considered to be Eish. So how would we even begin to address that question? So like all other modern shayles that come up, we have to go back to the sources, back to the Gemaras, back to the Rishon, look at the sources in Chazal, and try to see what we can determine. So Chazal do speak about the notion of Mechamim Gachela Shamateches, Chazal do speak about a piece of hot metal causing a piece of metal to glow. So a piece of hot metal that Chazal was describing is the closest that we have to Thomas Edison's light bulb. And according to many, many opinions in the Rishonim, which is the accepted halacha today, that is considered to be Eish. That to cause a piece of metal to glow would be an Eish on a level of Diorais, on a Torah level. And the fact that there's nothing that's physically being consumed is in a sense irrelevant. There is a fascinating raya, so to speak, a proof that is brought in the Sefer Avner Nezer to support this view, which is, again, clearly the accepted halacha today. The Avner Nezer says, I have a proof to you from a pasuk in Chumash. Pasuk in Chumash. Where in the world would the Torah speak about such a shail, about turning on an electric light? Says the Avner Nezer in an ingenious fashion, he says, Moshe Rabbeinu sees the snare, in a sense, an Eish. V'inei ha-snare bo'er ba'eish, v'ha-snare, Einenu ukol. The pasuk says it's an Eish, it's a burning fire. Lo sevaru Eish b'chomosh v'sechem. V'asneh einenu ukol. Even though the sneh is not being consumed, you see from here that the definition of Eish doesn't necessitate an achila, doesn't necessitate something being consumed. Fascinating, interesting raya. Again, one could question perhaps the details of the raya, but the idea is definitely rather fascinating. Halacha l'maisa, there was an absolute clear consensus view between all the gedolim in Europe when the electric lights began to enter into the scene, that the answer to the question is yes. It is an absolute Torah prohibition to turn on an electric light bulb. We equate the glowing of a filament to the burning of a piece of wood, and therefore, under no circumstances are we going to be lenient in terms of turning on light bulbs on Shabbos to treat them anything more than absolute Diaraisa. This question became a little bit more complicated as years went on, as technology advanced, that many of our light bulbs, I'm looking around here, are not even the original. Thomas Edison himself wouldn't recognize these light bulbs because they're fundamentally different. They are, many of them are fluorescent bulbs or other kinds of bulbs, which don't have that filament, don't have that burning piece of metal, so to speak. And one could raise a question, well, maybe those kinds of lights are a little bit more lenient than the old style incandescent bulbs. So the answer to that question, again, I preface by saying that I'm not an expert in physics, and the information that I'm giving you has been given to me by who I hope are the experts. So it's usually assumed that even though the fluorescent bulb itself is actually some kind of a gas that's burning rather than a filament, but part of the mechanism in the starting of the fluorescent bulb is, in a certain sense, old style technology, that there is some kind of a metal that is heated up, that is glowing in the starting mechanism. And if that's the case, that itself may be a very serious problem on a level of deraisa. Halacha lemaisa, under no circumstances does a person have a right to be lenient to turn on any forms of light bulbs with mamazeh, either because we're dealing with an outright prohibition min haTorah of havara, or even if for some reason you can find a type of a bulb that doesn't meet the criteria of havara min haTorah, there are still some very, very other serious problems involved. There's a general question of electricity, which is beyond the scope right now, where even situations where there's no light per se, and perhaps there's no havaras esh per se, there's a major fundamental machlokes gedolei poskim, just the very use of electricity, even in the outside of the context of lights, is that itself a Torah prohibition? Or is that perhaps a rabbinic prohibition, perhaps on a midrabanan, because of certain technicalities in Hilchas Shabbos? This was known throughout the last 70 or 80 years in the Torah world as the machlokas between the Chazanish and others. The Chazanish was of the opinion that any and every electrical device automatically is considered to be a Torah prohibition, nothing even related to Havara based on other concerns and other considerations, and not everybody agreed to the Chazanish on this point. So again, there are nuances of severity, whether a person approaches electrical devices outside the realm of lights through the eyes of being Isurim min haTorah, Isurim min haRabbanan, but for the most part, that's academic. Halacha lemaisa, they're clearly going to be off limits. We're going to speak about as we go on, as we move through history a little bit, why that machlokas may come back to us to become important even in the realm of halacha lemaisa. So again, as starting point now, up to now, we've pretty much spoke about the past of lights. We spoke about the past of Havara. We started off with Havara in the olden days, back in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, throwing wood into a fire. We moved on a little bit to the application of Gechelo Shemateches, which is still a little bit part of the ancient world, we'll still treat Edison as part of the ancient world, as the application of that to the modern day, quote-unquote modern day incandescent bulb. And we're assuming that that's all the realm of Melachos Deraisa. However, something radical has happened in the last, something radical has happened in the way things occur, Bizman Hazeh, and that's as follows. In the old days, in order to get something done, you pretty much had to do it yourself. You wanted to light a fire, so you had to go and get someone to do it for you, or do it yourself. Some physical person has to go ahead and rub the sticks together. Somebody physically has to go ahead and do a mice of Avara, take the wood and throw it into the fire, light the candle, or even in the days of Edison, you gotta turn on that light bulb, you gotta press that button, push that switch. You have to do some action physically with your body in order to get the desired result. And of course, then the discussion becomes, well, is that a deraisa, a derabanan, what kind of a light, etc. However, things have changed, as we all know, that lights and many other devices can have been able to be turned on for quite some time without me going anywhere near them. I could simply walk past a certain point and a sensor will pick up my motion and will send a message and the light will go on. Now, I am doing something, I am doing an action, I am walking past the sensor, and that sensor is pushing a... That sensor is sending a message, and eventually the light is going on. And the question becomes, is that considered to be lo sevar esh b'chomosh roseichem? Or maybe that's a little bit different. To make matters even more complicated in terms of the shaila, very often when I'm walking past the sensor, I'm not even particularly interested in the desired, in that end result. And that opens up for us a question that permeates really all of Hilchos Shabbos. What does Hilchos Shabbos have to say to us when I am doing action A, and my action A is setting down a chain of reaction that eventually B is happening? Do I want B to happen? Do I not want B to happen? Do I know B is going to happen? Do I not know B is going to happen? What are the parameters of this global question of Hilchos Shabbos? So let's analyze this out of the realm of lights for a moment. First, analyze it just in terms of general Hilchos Shabbos, when I'm doing X and Y may or may not happen or will certainly happen. So there is a machlokes atanoim between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon that permeates Masechet Shabbos. about a topic that's called Dover She'eino Miskavein. Dover She'eino Miskavein literally means I'm not intending on doing the malacha. Well, how is the malacha happening? Very simple. I'm doing A. I'm interested in doing A. I'm not thinking about B. I don't even know necessarily B is going to happen, but there's a chance B may happen. Honestly, there is a 50-50 chance that B may happen. So for example, the Tanaim discuss, a person wants to drag a bed in the backyard. What's a drag a chair in the backyard on Shabbos? Now the dragging of a chair in the backyard, there's nothing wrong with that. As long as there's an Eruv, that's perfectly okay. But the making of a hole in the backyard is a very serious halachic problem on Shabbos. That touches a potential malacha on Shabbos. So here the fellow is not interested in digging a hole in his backyard. All he wants to do is to drag the chair. Now if you ask him, are you aware of the fact that a hole may be made? The answer is yes, it may be. That's the key word, it may be made. There's a 50-50 chance, so to speak, that the hole may be made. So that's what's called an halacha dover she'eino miskavein. Is that permissible? Is that prohibited? So that was a dispute between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Yehuda's opinion was that that's out of the question. You can't do that. How in the world could you do something on Shabbos knowing full well that there's a 50% chance that you may be doing a malacha? Therefore, Dover She'eino Miskavein is off limits according to the view of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon says no. That Dover She'eino Miskavein is actually permissible. It's permissible even l'chatchila on Shabbos according to the view of Rabbi Shimon. How do we paskin the halacha on this? So this is almost an exception to the regular rule of Pesach. Usually, when there's a machlokes between Rabbi Shimon, 9 out of 10 times we follow the view of Rabbi Yehuda. And here the Gemara tells us this is one of those exceptions, that the halacha is accepted like Rabbi Shimon, that it's perfectly permissible for a person to do action A, even though there's a chance that action B may result, even though that action B is a malacha. If it happens, it will be a malacha. That's okay. I don't have to be concerned with that. Dover She'eino Miskavein is permissible. But then the Gemara puts the brakes on this view of Rabbi Shimon, this accepted view. Comes the Gemara and tells us, Abai v'Rava d'Amri Chirvai, both Abai and Rava. So Abai and Rava had a lot of arguments. If they agreed on this one, this is good to go. So Abai and Rava agreed about the following consideration, the following limitation, that when did Rabbi Shimon permit you to do A? And even though B may happen, the key word was may happen. What if B will happen? I know B is going to happen. I'm certain B is going to happen. Or, in the view of many opinions, I'm fairly certain. I'm more than 50% certain that's going to happen. So comes the Gemara and says, sorry, that even Rabbi Shimon would prohibit that. Abai v'Rava d'Amri Trevayim, Modu Rabbi Shimon b'psik reisha v'lo yomus. Psik reisha v'lo yomus is an illustration, not the prettiest illustration, but we'll just say it over very, very quickly. But it's really just a phrase to denote a halachic concept. Psik reisha v'lo yomus means, imagine the person tells you the following story. I have a bird, and I want to take the head off of the bird. Why? Because I want my kid to play with the head of the bird. Apparently that was an exciting toy back in the olden days. I want to give the bird's head to the child. What's wrong with playing with the toy on Shabbos? That's beautiful. Enhance the Onik Shabbos. No, but if you take off the bird's head, so the bird is going to die. Killing a bird, killing any animal for that matter, is the Issur D'Oraisa of Shochet on Shabbos. So the fellow says, me kill the bird? I don't want to kill the bird. I want to take off the head. The fact that the bird's going to die, that's a Dover She'eino Miskavein, right? So the answer is wrong. That's not a Dover She'eino Miskavein. That's a Psik Reisha V'lo Yomus. You're going to cut off the head of the bird. It's not going to die. Of course it's going to die. And therefore, whenever it's a Psik Reisha V'lo Yomus, that overrides, that trumps the otherwise limited Kula, the limitation of Dover She'eino Miskavein. That Kula no longer applies because Psik Reisha kicks in. So this is a Gemara in many, many places in Masechah Shabbos. So we now have two rules of Pesach Halacha to work with as we're getting ready to address the person passing the censor. On the one hand, Dover She'eino Miskavein is permissible. On the other hand, Psik Reisha is no longer Dover She'eino Miskavein. Comes the Gemara and gives us a third rule, a third principle. Now, when is something really, really, truly called a Psik Reisha? That's if, when I do A, I know B is going to happen, and I'm very happy that B is happening. Now again, that wasn't my primary intent, but I am more than satisfied that B is happening. That's what we call in halacha psik reisha de nichale. And that's a big problem. That's real Chol Shabbos. If it's a psik reisha de lo nichale, now lo nichale doesn't mean that I don't want it to happen. Lo nichale means I really couldn't care less one way or the other. So I'm doing A, and I know B is going to happen. If I don't know, then it's not a psik reisha. So I know B is going to happen, but I couldn't really care one way or the other. What is the halacha view of that? What is that? Is that mutter or is that aser? So far we have a third case. Can dov hashem miskaven mutter? Psikreisha de nichalei aser. Psikreisha de lo nichalei? Question mark. What is the halacha? So this is a big machlokas, a big dispute between the Rishonim. There is one opinion in the Rishonim that says that as long as you can knock this down to a psikreisha de lo nichalei, you're good to go. You can do whatever you want. As long as it's a psikreisha de lo nichalei, that's perfectly acceptable. That was the view of the Sefer HaOruch. The Sefer HaOruch was actually a Sefer that was written even before the days of Rashi. So you're talking about quite an old source. It was of the opinion that psikreisha de lo nichalei is muta lechatchila. Some of the ramifications of that view would be somewhere along the following. A person wants to wash the tilas yadayim in his backyard. And he wants to pour the water over the grass. What would we think about that? Obviously, his primary intention is not to water the grass that he pays his gardener to do, or he has a sprinkler system on. His primary intention is to wash the tilas yadayim. Can we hide behind dova she'ena miskaven that he's causing the grass to grow? No, because it's a psikreisha. The grass will be improved. The grass will grow a little bit from the water that he's adding. Is that a psikreisha de nichalei or is it lo nichalei? Well, if it's his backyard, it's probably nichalei. If it's somebody else's backyard he's not particularly friendly with, maybe it's a psikreisha de lo nichalei. So according to the Aruch, we could envision being perfectly permissible to pour water on grass on Shabbos. I can come up with a scenario that there's nothing wrong with pouring water on grass on Shabbos as long as it's lo nichalei in the end result. I'm doing it to wash my hands. Lo nichalei, it should be fine. However, la halacha, many of the Rishonim, probably most of the Rishonim, disagree with the Sefer Aruch, led by the opinion of Tosfos and Masechet Shabbos that maintains that psikreisha de lo nichalei is not mutter. Not a green light. It doesn't mean that it's absolutely okay. It means it's not a prohibition min haTorah, but it's still a prohibition mid the Rabbanan. And that's how we assume the halacha and Shulchan Aruch, that a psikreisha lo nichalei is not an outright heter. There's no green light to do psikreishas lo nichaleis. It's not as bad as real chul Shabbos deraisa, but it's still not so good either. It falls into that category of Shabbos that's called Potter of al-Asr. We know in Hilchos Shabbos, there are three categories. Either something is chayev. Chayev means it's a malacha d'oraisa. Mutter means you're allowed to do it. Potter of al-Asr means don't do it. It's prohibited by the Rabbanon. But if you do it, not Hilchos Shabbos min haTorah. When my older son, this was already a couple of years ago, when he was also about a little bit below the age of 10, about 8 or 9 or so, I started learning with him Mishnayos, and we were learning Mishnayos Masechet Shabbos, and we got to this difficult concept called Chaya versus Potter versus Mutter, and I wasn't quite sure whether an 8-year-old really grasped the difference, this notion of Potter, almost somewhere in the middle, that are you allowed to do it? Not really. But if you do it, it's not so bad. So I wasn't quite sure. You know, we kept on having it, Mishnah after Mishnah after Mishnah, and kept on saying it, but I never really knew whether he totally understood it. So at one point, I came to the realization that he did understand it when he pushed his younger brother down the stairs. And I informed him that, in a very nice, maybe a little bit stronger than nice, that why'd you do that for? Why'd you push your little baby brother down the stairs? Baruch Hashem wasn't too many stairs, didn't get hurt. Why'd you push your baby brother down the stairs? So he said to me, oh, come on, Abba, it was only 3 stairs. It wasn't like 20 stairs, it was only 3 stairs. I said, you know, you're right. If you would have pushed him down 20 stairs, you would have been in a lot of trouble. That would have been really bad. You push him down 3, it still wasn't the right thing to do, but it's not as bad. So he looks to me like through the eyes of an 8-year-old, says, Abba, what you mean is, I'm not chayev, I'm putter. So when I heard him say that, I realized, number one, he got off scot-free, no punishment for that one, got a kiss on the head, and number two, I finally understood that he understood Mishnayos Masechet Shabbos. So let's put things back into perspective of halacha. We don't generally follow the view of the Aruch. We try to follow the view of most of the Rishonim of Tosfos, that when I have a psikreisha de lo nichalei confronting me, I don't want to do it outright. But again, is it Chil Shabbos deraisa? Not really. So now, let's play out some of these scenarios in terms of walking past censors on Shabbos. I walk past the censor on Shabbos. What am I doing? I'm taking a Shabbos spatzir. There's nothing wrong with that. That's action A. However, my walking past the censor is going to turn on the light. It's not a Dover Shedim Miskaven. Who are you kidding? That's not a Dover Shedim Miskaven. You know exactly what's going to happen, but you don't care about that light. Or do you care about the light? Or what's the answer to that question? Do you care about the light or not? So the answer is, it probably depends how dark it is. If it's dark, and you're very, very happy that light goes on, so that is a psikreisha de nichalei, and that's a big problem. If it's not so dark, and doesn't really help you. You're not even paying attention to what's going on. So that's probably a psik reisha de lo nichalei. Now again, I didn't say that a psik reisha de lo nichalei is mutter. I just said it's poster. I said it's not as bad. Can we possibly make things a little bit better? So there is a machlokis at Rishonim. What if you have a psik reisha de lo nichalei on something that itself is only a malacha derabanan? Something that even if you would do it actively, even if you do it intentionally, would not be a deraisa for some technical reason. So that's a big, big machlokas, a rishon machlokas in Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, a major tumult in the poskim about can we permit psik reishas, the lo nichaleis, on things that themselves are only midrabanan. But this doesn't seem to help us with the lights, because the lights very often are deraisas. Or are they? Remember, we weren't so sure. Some of the lights and some of the sensors, b'zman hazeh, may trigger off devices that are deraisa. Some of them may trigger off devices that are derabanan. So I would say as follows. If you're walking past a device that's a real old-style incandescent light that's a deraisa, I'm much more nervous about that. If you're walking past something that's only a derabanan type of a sensor, which some of them are, I would say there's significant more grounds to be making. I didn't come from Bergenfield to Phil and to Paschal, to Mora Halacha, B'fnei the Asra. There are different opinions about this, about how much do we have a right to be making on Psik Reisha Lo Nichaleis and the Rabbanans and how much not. Suffice it to say, there are many, many different opinions about this. If you would ask me my opinion, Lichat Chila, if a person could, I would try to avoid all these things. But we're living in a world where it's almost becoming impossible to avoid. Because no matter where we're turning, we're walking past lights, we're walking past cameras, it's almost impossible to avoid these kinds of things. So very often, some of the coolers that we may have to rely on are psik reishas de lo nichaleis, perhaps psik reishas de lo nichaleis on de rabbanans, perhaps one could argue that if I'm not even aware of what's going on, I'm not even thinking about it, maybe that's even less than a psik reishas de lo nichaleis. The psik reishas de lo nichaleis means I know that I'm pouring water, and I know that the grass is growing, I just don't want the grass to grow, I'm not interested. Over here, if you stop me and say, mister, do you realize you just turned on, wow, light, I just put on film, I don't even know what's going on. So maybe one could argue that we're not obligated to tell you that you're on film. We're not obligated to tell you, do you realize that crossing the street is going to turn off 16 different sensors? I never want to quote this in the halachic world, but it's almost like what you don't know doesn't hurt you. It means if you're not aware of what's going on, that may be significantly less of a problem in terms of Hilchos Shabbos. So again, there are different opinions that, based on some of the facts, some of the lomdos that we're talking about now. But all of this is assuming that, at least to some degree, I don't really want the outcome. We cannot begin to discuss Davar Shein Miskaved Upsik Reishas if it's a Davar HaMachaved Mamish. If I do something absolutely outright, you know, intentionally, so that then we're learning the wrong sugya. That's not Psik Reishas. That's a Davar HaKavanah. That's a Davar HaMachaved Mamish. Which leads us to, I guess, in a certain sense, we can call the lights of the future, or I think the future has already arrived, but for we'll have to treat it as the future anyway. What if you have a situation where I am, quote-unquote, turning on a light, but listen to how far removed my turning on a light is. I am not doing like they did back in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. Nobody's rubbing two sticks together to start a fire. Nobody is even walking over to the light switch and pressing a light switch anymore. And nobody is even walking past sensors anymore. There's a whole new world out there of turning on lights and other electric devices and many other of modern-day devices by simply doing one thing, by opening up my mouth. I open up my mouth and I say, turn on light and shine. Vayom Elokim Yior, Vayior. All of a sudden, this is like back to basics. That's where the Bereshit created the world, and the light goes on. And the question is, what is that? What in the world does the Halacha have to say about that? I didn't do anything. I didn't do a Maisa. And one could argue the Torah says, Lo Sase Kom Halacha. It's not a Maisa. It's not a Maisa. It's not an action. Maybe it's permissible. So I have to disappoint you on that one on multiple fronts. First of all, who says that's not called a Maisa? I opened up my mouth. I moved my lips. I did something. Is that called a Maisa or not? So actually, you have to go back to the old world. Because there's a proof we can derive from a sugya in Maseches Bava Metzia of all places, which is not even talking about Hilchos Shabbos. The Gemara is talking about a totally different prohibition. It's talking about muzzling an animal. L'sachsam shor b'disho. You're not allowed to, when the animal's working, you're not allowed to muzzle the animal. The Gemara quotes a question, what's the din chosma b'kol? instead of taking a physical muzzle and putting it on the animal and making the animal work to violate the issur l'sachser b'disho, the animal's walking on its own, no muzzle, nothing physical. I'm standing behind the animal, and the minute it starts to bend over to eat, I scream, get away, move away. And the animal gets so terrified that it's working, and it refuses to eat. I was chosin the animal b'kol. What do you think about that? Is that a violation of l'sachsam shabbadisho? So we paskin l'halach like Rabbi Yochanan, who says, not only is that a Torah violation, I would be subject to the punishment of malchus for that. I would receive lashes for that prohibition, even though the halacha says we require to be chayav malchus alav sheyesh bo maiseh. It has to have an action. So where's the action? I just opened up my mouth. Where's the action? So say Chazal, akima svasav havi maiseh. You moved your lips. That's the maiseh. Now that's a very, very tricky statement, because we know in other areas of halacha that's not true. A person speaks lashon hara. It's a terrible avera. That's the bad news. The good news, you don't get malchus. Imagine if the world get malchus lashon hara. That would be. I can't even begin to imagine that. So there's no malchus lashon hara. Why? Not because it's not a bad thing, but because it's a lav she'ein b'maisa. But it involved my lips. So Tosfos explains that there's more to it than just involving your lips. If you involve your lips, akima svasav, and that results in a maisa happening, that's called a maisa. In the case of lashon hara, it had terrible ramifications, terrible consequences of what I did by speaking, but there's no maisa to pin. Whereas in the case of the muzzling, not only did I open up my mouth, but that itself caused the maisa of the animal working without being able to eat, and that's called the maisa in halacha to give malchus for. It would appear that concept can be carried over to Hilchos Shabbos as well. Lo sasa kol malacha. Rabbi, I just opened up my mouth, I didn't do a maisa. Right, true, but you did open up your mouth, and your mouth resulted in a mice of the light going on, so that is a maisa. That is cool. Lo sasa kol malacha. That would be a chilul Shabbos deraisa. One could add, to make matters even more difficult for us, that not only do we have to come on to this big chiddush of learning a sugyan bav mitzi and compare it to chasma b'kol, but there are other very real issues involved in a person just saying, in a sense, let there be light, turn on the light. There is a prohibition called Daber Dovar. The Pasuk says in the Navi Yeshayahu that not only are we not allowed to do Malach on Shabbos with action, we're not even allowed to speak about doing Malach on Shabbos. I'm telling a story saying, I'm driving somewhere tonight. Guess what? That statement, I'm driving somewhere tonight, is considered to be a violation of the Pasuk in Yeshayahu of Daber Dovar. That's an absolute prohibition on Shabbos. I'm driving somewhere tonight. Unless if a person is driving for a makom mitzvah. And then it's a whole question, is it necessary for him to tell that he's driving? Now that becomes a very lomdish shaila. But just stomp to say, I'm driving, or I'm going to write something tonight, I'm going to do the laundry as soon as Shabbos is over. Anything that you do, describing and talking about a malach that you're going to do, is an outright violation of the poskim of Yishayel, called the Daber Dovar. Poskim say that if you can keep out the word malacha out of the picture, then it's okay. Let's say instead of I'm saying I'm driving somewhere, I say I'm going somewhere today. Now I know you're driving, you know you're driving, you know he's driving. But you didn't say you're driving. I'm going. Going means walking. It's going to be a very, very long walk to California, but I'm going. Years ago, I used to teach Hilchos Shabbos in Stern, so we were learning this topic about how to be careful to leave out the word drive. It's a bad word in Shabbos. You say the word going. So one of the girls came back to me, and she said, you know, she went out for Shabbos, and she taught her parents this halacha, and she was trying really hard to show them throughout the course of the Shabbos meal about how to try to leave the word driving out of the conversation and substitute with the word going. And she said, by the end of Shabbos, her mother said to her with this exact lush, she said, I would say to you that you're driving me crazy, but you'll probably correct me and say, you're going me crazy, so I'm not even going to say it. One of the reasons why Amir Eliakim, why one is not even allowed to instruct a non-Jew to do malacha for us, is actually for this reason. There are many other reasons also, but one of the reasons is that Amir Eliakim is Amira, is Daber Dovar. When I asked a non-Jew, please turn on the light, that's a problem. That in of itself is a problem because I mentioned a malacha. Again, there are other reasons for Amir Eliakim as well. So it appears to me that a person is, in a sense, talking to the device. If talking to the non-Jew is prohibited because of Daber Dovar, how in the world could talking to the device be permissible? So I think that there are many, many grounds to have serious, serious reservations. Potential melachas derais involved, based on chasima b'kol. For sure, isurim based on psuchim in Yishayof, potentially isurim d'rabbanav and Miril Yaakov, a whole host of different isurim that would be involved, putting aside all the regular issues of kavod Shabbos and of the dechol, and those are half dozen other considerations, but even the pure outright halachic issues are very, very serious ones when we deal with any of these kinds of devices. So I think at least we were able to give to somewhat of an overview and to see almost, in a sense, really the godless of the Divrei Torah Kedosha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu uttered these words of Lo Sevar Esh B'chol Moshe Seichem, and Lo Sevar Esh has different applications as the world continues. HaKadosh Baruch Hu grants us the great knowledge to be able to advance technology, so it's up to us to try to figure out and try to apply, to be able to figure out how to take that Chochmas Hashem and to apply it properly. I think we can get a little bit of a chizuk, we'll end with a little bit of chizuk v'sorus, a little bit, hopefully, a little bit of inspiration, that perhaps we can get some inspiration, not only from the fact that, in the negative sense, that Lo Sevar Esh B'chol Moshe Seichem applies from generation to generation, but we can take that in the sense of the positive as well. Remember a few years ago, somebody had pointed out, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it was January 1st on the year 2000. So the New York Times, I don't know whether they published it or they put it on, I don't know exactly what it was. They put out some kind of almost like a mock edition of what the newspaper is going to look like in the year 2100. So, it's quite a chutzpah to do that. I mean, what's going to be in the news? Who knows what's going to be? Who's going to be running the world? Who knows what the world's going to look like in the year 2100? So you got to really have a lot of chutzpah or a lot of nevuah, something ruach hakodesh to put out such a newspaper. But if I'm not mistaken, that there was one thing that they actually did put into the New York Times, that they put on the very bottom of the Friday Times, a little thing that says, reminding Jewish women, Sabbath candle lighting is such and such. That they knew with absolute certainty is going to be around 100 years from now. Because the same way, why do we light Shabbos candles? In the end of the day, we light Shabbos candles because you can't light candles on Shabbos. So the Lo Sevar Esh B'chol Moshe Seichem was as true as it was when Moshe Rabbeinu first received it. It's a truth today. It was true in the days of Edison. It's going to be true. It'll pass no matter what other contraption comes after the Alexa days. I'm sure there'll be new and more fascinating technology to come. But one thing is true, Lo Sevar Esh B'chol Moshe Seichem will always be true, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's great gift of Shabbos will always be true as well, and Klai Yisrael, the Nitzchis of Torah, will always be true as well. So I hope we were able to touch a little bit on the Sugya and a little bit of appreciation for the Nitzchis of Torah. Okay.
Okay, I want to thank Rabbi Sabalowski.